We are Natalie and Matthias. We welcome you to our conversations with B2B ecosystem experts and platform founders. Our goal is to uncover what they learned and help you to launch and scale platforms, marketplaces, and business ecosystems. Enjoy!
This new episode of our Platform for Future podcasts. I'm here with my co-host, Matthias Walter. Hello, Matthias.
Hello, Natalie.
Hi. So I'm Natalie Dumas-Lamborghini. And Matthias, today I'm actually very pleased because we've got our first French platform on this podcast. And what a platform. It's a unicorn. And for this to talk to us about this platform, we're welcoming Adrien Nussenbaum, or Adrien, who co-founded Miracle in 2011. Adrien, bonjour.
Hello, everyone. And thanks for having me, Natalie and Matthias.
Thank you. So we're going to go very quickly into the deep conversation, and I'm going to ask you straight away to introduce a little bit your company and how you created it. Just give a bit of history for our listeners who maybe don't yet know about Miracle.
Yes, sure. So I have to tell everyone that you put a lot of pressure on me because you said we need to keep it crisp. And I'm a French person who loves to talk, so I'm going to try my best. So very simply, Miracle is a technology company. We provide a SaaS solution, which allows B2B and B2C organizations around the world to launch and manage marketplace and platform businesses. And we work today with over 300 companies around the world, 12 of the top 40 US retailers, companies like Carrefour, like El Corte Inglés, like Siemens, like Airbus, like Toyota. So very broad reach across different industries and sectors. And Miracle is a company that we started in 2012 with my co-founder, because we were convinced that platforms and marketplaces were really transforming profoundly industries go to market, and that this was a model that really captured the potential of digital, this ability to create large network effects, large ecosystems. And we wanted to offer to the market a solution that would make it very easy to not only launch and build a marketplace platform, but also to manage it and grow it at a large scale. So this is really, in a nutshell, Miracle is a 350 people company, growing, very fast. We just raised $300 million in September 2020 as a Series D funding to really accelerate and continue to accelerate our growth. So it's an exciting space, exciting times, and very excited to be joining you today.
Great. Thank you for the intro. And I also saw on your website that in 2018, SAP, so a German unicorn, became an official retailer and partner of Miracle. So it's like a German and French connection here. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. Ich bin ein Berliner.
Ich bin ein Plattform. Geil.
Ich bin ein Plattformer. Yeah, that's his best. I'm very excited because it gave me the opportunity to speak a bit German with you guys. But I'm sure it's not the purpose of the podcast to do German lessons.
And what I'm really happy about is, or we are happy about, is that you are kind of an infrastructure platform. So you said in the beginning that a lot of companies using Miracle to build a platform, a successful platform business. So you are in a kind of unique position that you observed how companies, especially B2B companies, leveraging platform business to transform their own business, their core business, and looking for new growth opportunities. So we would like to talk with you about the, let's say, patterns for success when implementing or adopting a platform strategy. And to make it easy for our listeners to better follow, so typically when you implement a platform, you go through different life stages. So first you need to start with this initiative. So you need to find and implement, make this platform part of your overall corporate strategy. Then you go into implementation, and then you come to a life stage where you want to scale and where you want to grow. And maybe we can use this as an outline to go through each life stage and talk with you about what you see and what you have observed and experienced. Working together with those companies as patterns for success. So maybe let's go straight into the first phase and talk about, what is required when a company, an incumbent company, wants to start a platform? What is your experience here? What is required?
Yeah. So I think along the basis of your question, there's kind of three big stages I think we can discuss. The first one is how to define and assess the opportunity for a platform. The second one is really talking about some of the key success factors when launching a platform. And the last area is probably once you've launched, realizing that it's only the beginning of a deeper transformation of your company, the way you operate, and it impacts really your organization broadly. So if I start with the topic of the opportunity, there's when we work with companies, we see two different situations. We see, I would say, defensive platform strategies and offensive platform strategies. And most of the time, it goes back to whether you're on the offense or on the defense. It goes back to a very simple thing that I often use with executives when we meet, is I always tell them a simple way to see if there's a platform opportunity for you is to think beyond your business and look around, look at your partners, look at your suppliers, look at the customers of your suppliers, the partners of your partners, look at that broader world that surrounds you and ask yourself a simple question. Are there transactions happening in that broader world that could happen through you? Transactions for which you could not only be legitimate to provide those, to organize those transactions within your own platform, but if you were to do that, could you actually provide those, enable those transactions of goods or services in a better way with a higher quality, for example? Could you create more fluidity in your market if you were to be the one organizing those transactions? Could you provide benefits for buyers and sellers if you were the ones to be who wouldn't be in the middle? Could the data that you would get from this allow you to improve your own business, improve the business of your partners? And this is a very simple framework, but it often gets, starts the conversation in a very interesting way, because you put around people in the table and you will see, the commercial director who says, it's true, today we have those small distributors who are not digitally enabled, and we're seeing that it's somehow breaking the value chain and in the distribution and servicing of our product. Maybe if we could have all this on the same roof, everyone would benefit from that. Or, we have customers that regularly call us and they're looking for specific parts, but we don't have them. So we have people who are actually paid to make phone calls to other vendors and suppliers to find those parts. And we kind of find ourselves in a disjointed value chain. And so, and you get it started like that. And so the defensive of the, or the offensive really is in the timing of when you wake up to that opportunity. If you wake up to that opportunity because all your KPIs are in the red, and basically people are saying, oh, there is this new company, it's a tiny company from Seattle, it's called Amazon, and they started selling books, and now they're selling DVDs, and now they're selling CDs, and now they're selling DIY, and now they're selling TVs, and now they're selling fashion. Oh my God. And what can we do? This is kind of defensive. It doesn't mean it's too late, but it means that you're entering a platform strategy in a reactionary mode. And when you do that, the challenge is to react really fast and well. But when you think of it more you know, I'm seeing this new opportunity because of digital. Now we can create all those connections, which we couldn't do before. What if we became the Amazon of our industry, the Uber of our industry, and so forth? So on the first topic of opportunity, really, this is how I view things. Obviously, for digital natives, it's easier because they start with no legacy. So they just go for it. The challenge for them is that they don't have a brand. They don't have a partner ecosystem. They don't have all the key pillars that can enable a successful platform. Whether it's for incumbent, it's really around change. But I'll stop on the opportunity, but I can go into the key success factors if you want after.
Yeah, so it's about identifying your ecosystem and the lack of fluidity in some parts of the ecosystems where you can handle the or could handle the transactions. You said something that I'm gonna ask you about. You said, are we legitimate to go after this ecosystem? And yet, you know, sometimes this is the first question actually that we hear. I'm not legitimate to build that platform because, so you know, it's not my core business, for example. And yet I don't think that being legitimate is really really a roadblock, because when you think about, you know, Airbnb or Uber, they weren't actually legitimate specifically on the market. However, I think, you know, do I have partners or customers, etc., who I can leverage to build that? And in that, it's kind of a you know, being also legitimate. That's more the angle I would think about. But can you tell me what you think about this legitimacy of building a platform or not?
Yeah, I think it comes back to something which I observe a lot, which is that all the incumbent businesses, they are either services or product businesses. If we make it very simplistic, you know, they either sell products or make products or provide services through human beings or. And so the way they view their asset is really centered around this, their core product, the people, and they don't realize that, one thing they need to understand to understand their legitimacy to be a platform is that a platform business is an infrastructure business, it's a digital infrastructure business in a way, whether you like it or not, it's a profound change. So, you know, if you have an amazing supply chain that you've built to sell cars or distribute cars, you're going to see yourself as a car distributor. You're not going to see yourself as a company with an amazing supply chain. If you want to become a platform, you need to start seeing yourself as through the quality of the assets that you've built. If you're a great brand that people trust because they're buying books from you, you're not just trusted because you sell books. You're trusted because you're a great brand that has built loyalty, engagement, reliability. And this becomes your assets. And so the legitimacy is really waking up to understanding that in a digital world, becoming a platform is understanding that your assets can become, then can allow you to create an infrastructure business. And so if you think of Miracle, you know, when we started this company, we had no legitimacy to power the platforms all over the world for large enterprises. What was our legitimacy? Our legitimacy is that my co-founder and I, we had been ourselves building and running our own platform for 6 years. So this was our legitimacy to create an infrastructure business, to say our infrastructure is technical and business know-how. And really one thing which you see, because you've mentioned Airbnb, Uber, these are companies that had no legitimacy, but they had the freedom to think beyond the boundaries of the existing business that they have built. And so for me, the legitimacy is really a question of understanding that.
So I can also understand this this kind of a problem, or maybe where can I start, and what can I do with my core business or with my incumbent business? How do you see all the companies then proceed? Do they build a platform very close to the existing product and service they have, so close to the existing business, or do they look for more opportunities a little bit far away, so to avoid any kind of negative impact or kind of an I don't know what kind, what is the impact situation to my core business?
It's a very interesting question, because it is a true dilemma that we observe. And obviously, if I stick to what I was saying before, I would always recommend companies to build platforms not too far from their core. Otherwise, this ability to leverage, your assets is more difficult, because if you're Airbus and you manufacture plane and you decide to create a platform to connect school teachers in underserved populations, you could try to say, yes, Airbus, it's all about connecting people through the sky. but what is your legitimacy to do that? Whereas if you are Berlitz or some online school or test preparation company, you are much more legitimate to create a platform to connect teachers all around the world, because you have a know-how of your industry. So I think it makes much more sense to create something much more core to what you are, which brings, back to, in a way, the success factors, my second point, and connects to what you were saying, which is sometimes it's difficult because it can be frightening for stakeholders to build a disruptive model so close to their core. So we at Miracle, we've established the 10 commandments of a successful platform, but we try to streamline it to 3 to make it easier. And the first one is that it needs to come from the top. A platform initiative in an incumbent business needs to be supported by the top executives of the company, and to really be part of the strategy of the company. The second thing is that, and it goes back to what we were discussing, it needs to be integrated with your business. So does it mean, in some cases it's literally integrated in your existing website, e-commerce site, if you have one already, or sometimes it's integrated in your go-to-market strategy, if you have, sales reps on the ground, but it needs to be integrated. And the last point, which we always insist on, which I think sets the tone for the project, is that it's not a project, but it's a program. And by that, it means that the people who engage into a platform project, platform program, you see, I'm guilty myself. They need to understand that it's not a 3 month project where you go live and after 3 months you're done. It's a long term transformation. It doesn't mean that the ROI is not quite rapid, because we see a lot of our customers having ROIs under 8 to 12 months, which is really quick for digital projects. But it's really a long-term program. And it means that it will impact, and I think that's the third pattern for success. You need to be ready as an organization to learn and adjust quickly to what this program is going to create in your company. For example, you might need to change your go-to-market. If you realize that your salespeople should sell differently because now their customers are going through the platform, you need to adjust to that. You need to change your compensation plans, incentives. You need to think about pricing, because platform also create transparency. So you need to be able to think about pricing. You need to have a data-centric approach to collect the data from the platform and learn from. So I could spend hours and I'll stop there, but there's, there's many things that you're going to learn, and a successful platform is really about learning and adapting really fast to those learnings. And if you look at Alibaba, Amazon, it's exactly what they've done.
Yeah, I like your 3 points, and especially the second one, as you, when you mentioned, it needs to be an integrated part of your business. And this is also what we observed, and I think it takes also away kind of a fear from the management. So usually what you see when you say you have to transform your business, they think in the first then, I need now to completely move from a product company into a platform company. But I think this is not true. So most of the companies are adding platform to the mixture of business models they have in their business, so into the portfolio, so it becomes an integrated part of the business they do. So they do, of course, they will continue to run a successful product or a successful service, and additionally on top, they bring in platforms to the mix. It's also what we see with larger companies like Apple or whatever. They still produce a lot of products with iPhones, Macs, etc., but they added a platform component to the portfolio mixture, and this makes them so successful. So that's why I really like the second point about integration. Maybe let's move on to the second phase of a platform. So after you have received the support of the top management and you can launch this program and not this project, what is then required in the second stage of maybe let's launch this platform?
The first thing that I believe is required, and it's interesting because I went through it myself in my prior life when I launched a platform for a very large retailer in France. I really experienced success the day every department in the company started to ask themselves, what can this platform do for me, and what can I do for this platform? And so seeing this transition from, oh, there is this new activity going on somewhere in another department, which is it competing against me? Is it creating, alternatives, friction, and moving away from those fears to having really a, what can this platform do for me, and what can I do for this platform? And for example, if you take supply chain people, the day you launch a platform and they start realizing that, oh, that's interesting, maybe we have all these products that we hold in our distribution centers that we see not moving fast enough. Could we leverage the platform to move to the platform business part, those slow moving inventory, for example, and optimize our own supply chain? Or if you see people in the merchants team or the supplier relationship team, and they say, we have all these suppliers that are creating disruption in our market, but the volumes we can expect to sell from them are too low for us to reference them as suppliers and carry their assortment. What if we could invite them to join our platform and leverage the platform as an incubation area also for new disrupting upcoming products, for example? So when you think of marketing, their job is to drive traffic and visibility for the brands. And suddenly, if they're able to think in terms of, wow, we have not just our core products, but that kind of large extension around us that we can promote, or think about, what we're doing with, for example, Airbus Helicopter. We launched a platform to provide specific, products and chemicals and maintenance equipment for the partners on the ground who are servicing the helicopters. Suddenly your marketing changed, because you're not just a reseller of helicopters. You are an integrated end-to-end solution provider to your ecosystem. And so that's, for me, is really the key in creating success, is when every department in an organization realize that the platform is a very powerful tool to help them, and that they will benefit from that only if they also help the platform.
When you're talking, for example, about a very big group, what I'm hearing here is a big change management challenge, because, you know, sounds easy when you're saying, oh, they start to think about the platform in that way, how can they leverage? But actually, to get to that point, I guess it takes effort. Is it, how do you think that companies should handle that change management? I guess it also starts with your first point, should come from the top, but, you know, beyond that.
You know, it's as always, it's a lot of explanation, communication, examples. And frankly, this is, you know, we're a technology company, but we have 110 people dedicated to doing exactly what you described today, which is showing through examples how, you know, there shouldn't be fears of channel conflict. There shouldn't be fears of cannibalization. There shouldn't be fears of you know, pricing disruption. It's all something that needs to be worked, anticipated, and transformed into an opportunity. And that's really fundamentally the key goal. And you're right, it is pure change management. And you know, change management is always, it goes back to what I said, it has to come from the top, but it needs to be embraced by everyone in the company.
Yeah, and it shows again that this is not a separate program or whatever. It's an integrated part of the company, and it's becoming, as like when you have a new team member joining a team, then the team member becomes part of the team. It's not something who sits outside of the room, and he is becoming part of the team. So and he is also part of the or sitting together with the team in the room. So you have to everybody has to work together as a team. Also looking at, so this is a change management aspect. So also looking maybe at some, let's say, platform techniques, platform mechanics, or is there any bigger obstacles you observed when launching a platform you need to overcome, or maybe incumbent companies have to learn when launch a platform? What is different compared to a product and service business?
No, I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's all about building stakeholder alignment across the organization. That needs to start at the earlier stage of your platform project. It can be as simple as putting all the stakeholders around the table. It can be creating cross-functional teams. One thing that we've seen also work really well is bringing in the platform teams people from other teams. So to create, you know, cross-pollination of people. Because like that, you have those internal relays to communicate back to their colleagues, and I think it's just a lot of handholding, really pragmatically, but it's also one thing that I'll give you an example, and I won't name the client, but recently I was having a discussion with one of our customers. So it's in the B2C space, but they were a bit worried. So there was someone from the commercial team, merchandising team, who was a bit worried, saying, imagine we bring a seller on the platform and they sell the same chairs that we sell much cheaper. And they will, you know, cannibalize our sales and disrupt our business. And so this is, you know, the platform is not live yet. The marketplace is not live. So this is typically a fear and a situation of anticipated fear. But so what I told them, I said, you know, there's two options. Either that seller might be selling the same chair and somehow they have excess inventory of a few units and they're going to come and they're going to sell them at a cheaper price. And if they don't sell them at a cheaper price with you, they will sell them at a cheaper price somewhere else. This is not different than a promotion. And, you know, in retail, there's promotion all over the place. And so if they have just a few items to offload, after selling them, they will be done and you will go back to your own price. Or the other scenario is if they have hundreds of chairs at the same, at that lower price, then you need to ask yourself, why am I not able to sell at that same price? And maybe this is a category that you don't support enough to be competitive. This category should not be in your core focus. And so I told them, you see, you have a fear, but you think in an irrational way around that fear. You don't try to rationalize and structure the fear in different buckets and understand what they mean for your business and how you're driving your business. And for me, this is just one example, but in going through the motions of becoming a successful platform, you have tons of situations like that. So it's a lot about, you know, rationalizing the fears, leveraging data to really analyze. And we live in a world where a lot of incumbents, they don't base their decision based on data. They base them a lot on past experience, feeling, and in digital, it's difficult to do that. I think
it takes based on what we were saying earlier and what you just said now, building a platform business and adapting to a platform business. It's actually what you said. It's only the beginning of change because it really takes a lot of maybe thinking outside the box is a bit too common, but as an expression. But I think this is what it takes: taking a step back and looking at things from a more rational and different angle, not from an expert's point of view, with the frames that are your expertise, but they're also your barriers in a way.
Yes, it's. I mean, we used to say. I think we said that in one of our keynotes, but it's your enemies of yesterday are your partners of tomorrow when you build a platform. And you know, look at Amazon, how they partner or provide services with every single company that they also compete with in around the world. I think there is this blurring of boundaries, which is a core element of platform. And as we are heading into a really platform world, it's not so much whether people should think or not. It's people should already be thinking about how they're going to do it and what role they're going to play in this platform world that's already there. Are they going to be organizers of the platforms in their ecosystem, or are they going to be contributors to the platforms? Or are they going to be a bit of both?
This is exactly what we also start with when we talk to our clients, that we start to build an ecosystem strategy and help them to make the transition from I have to focus on my sector or my industry and taking a much broader perspective and thinking also about what could be not only I position myself here, versus there are others, other players in this ecosystem I can partner with, and I can collaborate, I can co-create together, etc. So this opens up a broader range of options for the incumbents. So this leads maybe to our last section and life stage of a platform we wanted to talk about, to scale. So you implemented it, you launched it, you solved chicken egg problem, you solved, you overcome also the internal fears, the internal, fights against maybe this new kind of business, and you are on the market for some months, some years, but sometimes platforms also struggle to scale. So is there kind of, are there kind of patterns you observed? What is required to enable an hyper scaling growth or unlocking network effects, etc.? Also, more and more focus on B2B versus B2C.
Yes, I think if we look specifically on B2B, there's a few simple things. To create successful scaling platforms, the first one is common to all platforms. It's really the scale of the offering and the partner network. If you limit your platform to a small selection of products or services with a small selection of partners, you will. Whatever you or hard you try, you will limit your scale. That's a very simple. I mean, at Miracle we always say something a bit, and there's sometimes debate around it, but we say more sellers. These are the three success factors of a successful platform. Obviously, there is control, curation, selection, and all that comes to play. Specifically around B2B. I think one of the key thing, and we've been through that with our clients because it has been one of our areas of investment, but B2B has very specific payment mechanism and invoicing if you build a platform in B2B that only allows credit card payments, for example, like you would have in a consumer type of platform, you are limiting your reach because of the fact that you need to be able to integrate yourself with punch-out systems, with your e-procurement platforms and different forms of payment. And also one thing which is important. So it's the idea that B2B has very, as much more complex go-to-markets. Sometimes it can be tiered by types of customers, small, medium, large, enterprise. Sometimes it can be, direct or OEM or via distributors. Sometimes it can be digital, catalog, branches, field sales. One way or another, the platform part of the business needs to fit into one of those strategies. So maybe, we recently launched a platform for 3M, the larger manufacturer of, a lot of different products. So we're working with their personal safety division. So the division that makes masks and gloves and safety products. And this is a division that works with small, medium, large enterprise, USA, all over the world. The first platform they've launched is specifically focused at the small and medium sized business. And it means that they have organized a go-to market and an experience that is consistent with that. So we know that this platform will not generate business with the large enterprises under contract. And that if we want to go and use the platform for those types of businesses, we are going to need to integrate the platform into the selling motions, into the go-to-market of that specific segment. So I won't go into too much of the details, but I think just as a conclusion on that, B2B is much more specific in their go-to-market. It's a much more refined go-to-market than B2C. And the platform really needs to from the beginning be clearly integrated into one or many of those go-to markets, all the way to thinking about how you compensate the reps, because you don't want to create channel conflict. You want the reps also to go and tell their customers, hey, you can also buy online now because we have this platform. You don't want to create a situation where the reps are visiting the clients and say, hey, buy from me. And at the same time, the client is getting marketing messages saying, hey, buy from the platform online. That's a typical example of a nice platform failure, if you get to that point.
Which I'm not going to name any French car manufacturer, but I've seen this between the online platform where you can supposedly buy the car, and then at the car dealer they say no, you know, don't go on the platform and buy from us because we don't know what's happening over there. So not to name anybody. But so on a more positive note, we also like to talk about the subject of sustainability, and we'd like to know your feeling about can platforms play a role in driving sustainability and positive impact in different formats? Do you see a trend towards that or not yet? What's your feeling about this?
So, I mean, I think there are different elements to that. I think they are obviously the most common, I would say, sustainable platforms. For example, in our round, you know, everything that organizes a circular economy, or you know, the sale of, you know, pre-owned, refurbished, secondhand products. And that's a very classic sustainable approach where we have clients, for example, like Darty, who sells refurbished electronics on the marketplace. Recently, what was interesting is that they're very famous in France for their trust contract or contrat de confiance, and they changed it recently to add a fourth pillar around really the idea of sustainability. We see clients we work with like H&M who launched a platform called Afound, where the assortment is sourced entirely from existing unused inventory. The idea is to sell 0% new material, really giving fashion new life. And we have Jewels in the UK, for example, who specifically brings brands and partners with brands who are committed to align with the responsibility, you know, and sustainability values that Jewels has around sourcing recyclable and sustainable materials. So I think these are very obvious examples of sustainable platforms. I think also that we see a lot of platforms around data that use data and to engage customers and users into better behavior. So I personally invested in a company called Spirit, which basically provides scale-based so devices that they install in big buildings and corporate offices to track the consumption of recyclable and non-recyclable goods and engage workers into some form of gamified project to allow to drive towards a more zero waste sustainable building. And it benefits everyone in the value chain, which is really a notion of platform, because that data is also used by the building operators. It benefits also the people who take care of like waste collection. So there is this kind of circular database platform. And maybe just one last example, which we also think is interesting. Recently, one of our customers, Madewell in the US, larger fashion apparel brand, they announced that they were participating in a pledge initiative, which is that by 2021, 15% of their products should be either black owned businesses or black made products. And this is really a strong commitment in the US in the current context. And the way they're going to allow that is to to leverage the platform that they've launched with Miracle, this Madewell marketplace, to invite Black-owned businesses to present and sell their products to the Madewell customers. So I think it's three different looks at sustainability in terms of ecology, in terms of just being better humans and fostering better communities.
Yeah, thank you. This is giving great insights. Unfortunately, looking at the time, I think we need to wrap up here a little bit. Of course, we could go on and go on and go on and talk for days talking about your experiences and what can be, go wrong and what you should consider when building a platform. Maybe also it would be of interest to our listeners to check out the Miracle website, because they also provide a lot of great insights, some studies, etc. And you see that they have also a lot of B2B and B2C customers already leveraging a platform business model. To kind of wrapping up our discussion here, so we had discussion around three life stages of a platform. And we started with this, of course, how to start such an initiative. And what I really liked is about that you said it's always important to have an ecosystem perspective. So taking a broader view on what is happening out there, what are your partners doing, what are the people in the value chain doing. And this starts to take a broader perspective on the ecosystem, and then to see what can I better do with a platform, what kind of inefficiencies I have in this ecosystem, and I can apply a platform to remove those inefficiencies. Then we moved on to the second stage of a platform, to launch it. And then interesting wise, it was not about chicken egg problem and so on, and then technical thing. It was more about, let's say, the human part, to say it's really important to understand this is a program and not a project. So it's a longer initiative, and important for those initiatives, it's always to think about change management. So to make this platform an integrated part of your business, of your running business, of your incumbent business. And so talking to all the teams and the different departments, and integrate them into this whole journey. And so they can benefit from the platform, but they can also provide some stuff to the platform. So it's like hiring a new team member and making this new team member part of the team. And then we have talked about the third part, about scaling. And the scaling is about that you should focus on the seller side, but also focusing on the long tail. So making platform maybe not leveraging the platform not for the A customers, but maybe for the C customers. And so thinking twice about where can your platform really help in your go-to-market strategy, and maybe remove inefficiencies in your go-to-market with your current customer base. And so maybe to avoid any problems with your, with your sales force you have, and maybe your A customers, because they require sometimes a more personal contact and not a kind of an digital contact via a platform. And the last part, we talked about sustainability. And what I really liked about was about the point, you gave some examples, but I like the part with the circular database approach. So leveraging the data you capture with your platform to maybe better utilize the assets you have, to also maybe have an impact on the consumption side. So it's really not about only about reducing waste and reusing material, but it's also about you as a platform, you're collecting a lot of data, and think about how can you leverage this data to make a more sustainable future. So I think this was really a great conversation with a lot of different aspects. And maybe a last question to you, Adrian. So we always ask our guests, so what would be a final key advice from you as a leader, as an executive, to other executives, other leaders, about when they plan to start such a platform initiative?
Don't be scared. trust your guts.
Very good.
That's short and crisp. You asked for short and crisp, Matthias. So Adrien made short and crisp. Well, thank you so much, Adrien. This was a very insightful and pleasant conversation.
Well, thanks to both of you for your time and invitation. And good luck, all of you, with your platform initiatives.
Thank you, too.
Don't be scared.
Yeah, don't be scared. And thank you. And enjoy the days and also stay healthy. Yes.
Bye.
Thank you.